We're talking about LGBTQ elected officials on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A wave of openly gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people are being elected to all levels of government. So rewind a bit when in 2012, when Tammy Baldwin made history becoming the first openly gay person to take a seat in the U.S. Senate, but rewind back to 1998 when she became the first woman elected to the House of Representatives. There are now 8 LGBTQ members of the House, 2 in the Senate, and the count of LGBTQ mayors across the country, it stands at 37, with Madison joining the ranks. Are you a newly elected lawmaker who identifies within the LGBTQ community? Why did you run for office? What's it like to be in your political role? Do you identify with the LGBTQ community? What do you think of the so-called rainbow wave? We're at 800-642-1234. Stephanie Barron is a lecturer of LGBT studies at UW-Milwaukee, and Stephanie stays with us. It seems like, Stephanie, more LGBTQ candidates right now who are running for office. Does that mean that we're going to see more of these types of perhaps policy with these candidates? Does LGBTQ candidates mean LGBTQ policy?
Well, yes and no. I think that there's a, like I said, just because someone is a marginalized identity or identifies somewhere along the lines of LGBTQ, I feel like those issues are part of them as human people. But also there's other ways in which you might experience a level of also wanting to do other things as well. And so I think the LGBTQ policy is part of that identity, but I don't think it's all of the identity. There's still issues how mayors or local officials might want to tackle issues of hunger or homelessness and policing and incarceration. And I think you have to consider LGBTQ populations in that, as well as other marginalized identities as well.
The Trump administration isn't as LGBTQ policy friendly as the Obama administration was. Has this motivated candidates and activists? Is there any correlation there?
Well, I feel like the nation at this moment is at this really weird spot. We have when I was an undergrad at Loyola, I had a professor who is now Representative Mike Quigley, and he said that all politics is local. So all of the what we're seeing perhaps in our local governments or city governments or state governments, et cetera, is really the thing that is showing movement and change. And I think more nationally, we're looking at a way in which perhaps the two need to eventually, I feel like it's going to bubble up. And instead of trickle down because of the movements that we're seeing at the more local level. And the more local level is really the day-to-day that affects us more often than some of these more national or federal policies. And then even with Obama, he also at the beginning of his presidency struggled with accessing and understanding and facilitating that LGBTQ conversation. But he showed over time that you could, once you listened and learned, you could access those populations and understand those viewpoints a little bit better than I think the current president might be willing to do.
Well, let's bring in the newly elected mayor of Madison to the conversation. We have Satya Rhodes Conway, and she is the first openly LGBT person to serve as mayor of Madison after defeating Paul Soglin. Satya, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So when you first thought about running for mayor, why was it important for you to let the community know you're a gay woman?
Well, first of all, I identify as lesbian or queer. And it was not even a question. I've been out since high school, and I was out when I ran for city council and won. I was out when I got the job at UW that I've had for the past 13 years. And there was just no question of, going back into the closet, as it were. So it's just who I am. I ran as a woman. I ran as a lesbian. I ran as you know, somebody who.
And you felt like there wasn't any.
Degree. I mean, you know, there's no question there.
Right. And not that you really didn't feel like you had to do much explaining for your voters about your identity. You could focus on policy.
Yes.
So
that
you.
It was not. I mean, you know, I think it's important because who I am, my identity informs my approach to the world and how I look at issues. But it was more important for me to connect with the people of Madison around the issues and challenges that Madison is facing.
And you were elected just over a week ago. You'll be sworn into office next week. How are you feeling right now?
I'm pretty excited. The transition team, the team period is very short, but we're working hard and it's really exciting.
Do you see that you are contributing to a bigger moment perhaps in history here?
Absolutely. You know, I do think, despite it being really easy for me to run as an out candidate, I know that that's not true for folks everywhere, and that there are folks who do have to make more of a decision when they're deciding to run as an out LGBTQ person. And I think it's really important that we make those decisions. I have had many people come up to me in the course of the campaign and since the election who have said either for themselves how important it is for them that I was running as an out lesbian or how important it is for their kids to have a role model of an out LGBTQ person in a leadership position. Mm. And that's why I think it's so important. You know, it's, I mean, for me, it was just, I mean, this is just who I am, right? But I think it's important for the community and particularly for young LGBTQ people to see us in leadership positions and know that they can be in leadership positions as well.
One other thing I want to ask you about that when you won the election, you also quoted Harvey Milk, the first openly gay elected official in California who was assassinated in 1978. Why did you look to his words?
You know, Harvey has always been an inspiration to me, and I think to many LGBTQ folks, whether we run for office or not. Again, because of that ability to see yourself in a leader and in an elected official, in the same way that Tammy Baldwin has been an inspiration to me and Mark Buchan has been an inspiration to me. When I sat down to, you know, you write two speeches, right? and when I sat down to write those, I was looking for a quote to sort of center them around and sort of thinking through, all right, well, who do I want to invoke in this moment? And I thought, well, gosh, who better than Harvey Milk?
Mm. Satya, thank you so much for sharing with us and your time.
Of course, it's a pleasure.
That was Madison's mayor. She was elected April 2nd in the election, Satya Rhodes Conway. Stephanie Barron, back to you. When you hear Satya looking for inspiration and saying, you know what, I've been out for a long time. I just didn't see it as an issue. What do you hear there?
Well, I think that, I mean, it's important. I mean, we have had, I really think that if we had adequate LGBTQ curriculum in schools, we could learn that LGBTQ history didn't just start with Stonewall. It didn't just start with Jean Compton's. LGBTQ history is U.S. history. It's American history. It's human history. It's world history. And I think if we had a better understanding of that historical timeline, we might be better able to know that, you know, LGBTQ populations are present and have been present, but also have existed through years and, you know, many issues of oppression and decades of oppression, perhaps centuries of oppression. I think hearing Satya, it's important because she had these folks to look up to, but I know that there are so many more, and Satya could be is an inspiration for future politicians coming down the road or future public speakers or future educators, just to know that there's somebody who they identify with in the same way that she identified with Milk and other politicians as well.
And these, openly lesbian women elected as mayor, Satya Rhodes Conway in Madison, Jolie Justice in Kansas City, Lori Lightfoot in Chicago, there's visibility there. How does this visibility help people's lives?
Well, I think there's hopefully a level of advocacy in the sense that in many times when we think about like cisgender straight politicians, we often, for some reason, think about them being able to advocate for everybody when really many bodies are regulated, women's, trans women, bodies of color, indigenous bodies. And so for some reason, we think that only LGBT folks are only considering managing this particular thing of LGBTness when really all of them are interconnected. And so I hopefully want us to start breaking away from this idea that it's just LGBT issues and not all of the things that are connected to the LGBTQ issue experience, right? Like housing, education, access to healthcare, adequate healthcare, jobs, income, wealth, et cetera.
The list goes on.
Yeah.
We're looking at the recent progress made by gay and lesbian politicians getting elected to offices at all levels of government. What this moment says, if anything, about sexual orientation in politics. Stephanie Barron is our guide. She is a UW-Milwaukee lecturer of LGBT studies. You can bring in your thoughts to the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you teach LGBTQ studies or politics? How are you addressing this topic in your classroom? Have you experienced defensive feelings from students or parents? You can call in. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up this conversation in just a minute right here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the wave of LGBTQ candidates winning elected office and what this moment means. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to a recent NBC Wall Street Journal poll, nearly 70% of Americans said they would be either enthusiastic about or comfortable with a presidential candidate who is gay or lesbian. We're looking at cultural shifts and what it means for sexual orientation in politics. Getting your thoughts along the way, your experiences, 800-642-1234. Are you a business or organization that promotes LGBTQ rights? Have you encouraged LGBTQ candidates to run for office? Do you identify with the LGBTQ community? How are you feeling at this moment? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Stephanie Barron is our guide. She is a lecturer of LGBT studies at UW-Milwaukee. Stephanie, when you look at the numbers, do these candidates, these newly elected people in offices, do they tend to skew to align with one party over another?
Well, I don't want to discount that there are LGBTQ members of that might identify as Republican. But I feel that perhaps it might come down to issues that are outside identity, and one party is more hard on that. For example, tough on crime often gets people, but sometimes tough on crime means tougher and disparate and disproportionate effects on communities of color and poor communities. And I also feel that track record wise, the Democratic Party might have access to or have had policies that have been more favorable to LGBTQ communities and marginalized communities in the sense that they're not so punitive or vindictive in that sense. So I feel that in some cases, yes, there is this identity that goes along with political affiliation. When I was a master's student at DePaul, I did a study on racial and gender beliefs in terms of political affiliation. And it's a it can be a two-way street. The literature tells us that it could be identity formation informs political affiliation, or sometimes it's political affiliation informs identity. And so it really depends on that individual person to where in which what party they align with and what that party is talking about. I mean, perhaps – I mean – even within the LGBTQ community, historically, not every LGBTQ person is on the same page with every other LGBTQ person. So you could have someone who has interesting views about immigrants or problematic views about folks of color. And so I think that the intricate ways in which we can form these identities is also important to take into account when considering sexual identity. Sorry.
Let's bring in Karen now from Green Bay. Karen, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because we have a son who's gay and a nephew, and I have friends who are transgender and gay and bi. And I'm just really disappointed with this whole Hagedorn election, and also I can't remember what the name of the other Supreme Court justice is, who
Lisa
also
Neubauer?
Very badly.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay.
The other Supreme Court candidate who had written negatively about gays in the past. Her name. I just can't remember her name right now. Anyway, I just wondered about this Hagedorn thing, and about that other justice who was elected, and I had a lot of hope that things were changing, but when things like this happen, it makes me feel sad and angry. And I'm wondering what we can do to so these people don't get onto the aren't elected. You know, I do all I can, and I still feel really sad about that.
Karen, thank you for the call. So it sounds like when the politics really hit home for Karen's family, that has an impact on her and how she sees her son.
Mm-hmm. I think we also have to look geographically at where we find these wins occurring. And, you know, Madison, Eau Claire, and in some cases Chicago, the Lightfoot election, she won in very proportionately white districts, and much of that is due to her tough on crime aspects. So there's some we could unpack that a little bit later.
Yeah.
But I feel like state-wise, Wisconsin is a weird state, and I'm talking about this as someone who doesn't. I'm not from here. I'm from Chicago, and so in these more highly clustered population sects, we see a little bit more Democratic candidates being elected. So here in Milwaukee and Madison and Eau Claire, and these are also college towns as well. And typically, polls show and statistics and surveys show that if there's a college in that town, hypothetically, it might lean a certain way to the more left, center left, et cetera.
Well, Stephanie, I want to pause here and bring in Laura Benjamin, who is one of the three newly elected Eau Claire City Council members. She is the first transgender woman elected to office in Wisconsin. Laura, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
How do you think your experience translates to other members of the LGBTQ community in Wisconsin and as you hold elected office?
Well, I have to say, I echo a lot of what your guest has said. I ran on issues related more to our local economy and the growth that we're trying to see here with jobs and wages, more so than the fact that I am transgender. And it didn't come out until later in the campaign that it was even an issue for some people in our local region.
Why did you decide to run for office as an openly transgender woman?
Well, a number of things. I have transitioned publicly. I am a business owner here in Eau Claire, and it was a very visible transition. And so it wasn't like a choice. I wasn't like, well, I'm going to decide whether to be open or closeted. I knew that was going to be part of the conversation, and it was something that we talked about early on. But what really inspired me to run was both some of the local issues around our economy and also things like the current administration's attacks on Title VII and how they want to redefine at a federal level what it means to be discriminating on the basis of sex and only biological sex being the protected class in the Title VII discrimination.
Do you see us in a new place for equity right now? We've heard lots of talk about this rainbow wave. Are we in a new moment or not?
I like to think so. I feel like, you know, despite what happened with Brian Hagedorn's election and some of the people that came out in support of his more conservative views with regards to that, I feel like I got a lot of support from people who said, you know, your LGBTQ status doesn't matter to me. What matters to me are your policies and the ways in which that you want to lead our community. And so I feel there is a bit of a change in that. It's whether it's weighed in as a factor or not, it doesn't necessarily matter as much unless it's in a more positive way.
Well, Laura, thank you for taking a moment with us. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Laura Benjamin is one of three newly elected Eau Claire City Council members and the first transgender woman elected to office in Wisconsin. Stephanie, as we start to close this conversation, what do you think the future holds? What does it look like for LGBTQ involvement in politics?
Well, there's no negative to more voices in the room, more seats at the table. I think even with Hagedorn's, to the person who called in earlier about that, it's sad, yes, but we also have to look at we have to focus on our wins, right? Those are the ways in which we're going to make positive change. And just by being a positive force in all her family's lives and struggles and issues, I think that's what matters over his particular election. In the state of Wisconsin. And I think also it shows that Wisconsin itself is going through a bit of, change and flux, and all politics is local. We can see that change happening here. But I feel like there's no negative to more voices in the room. And with all of the folks that are coming out as LGBTQ candidates who are running really progressive candidacies and whatnot, I think that it's nothing but positivity, and I'm hopeful that we see some change go further in our nation, and how we access these programs or people and issues and et cetera.
Stephanie, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much.
Stephanie Barron is a lecturer of LGBT studies at UW-Milwaukee. Just ahead, we're trying to understand the concept of hope. We'll talk with a social psychologist as we learn about hope, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.